You're listening to In the Drink, hosted by me, Joe Campanelli. Normally, I'd say when I'm not hosting In the Drink, you can find me at one of my restaurants in Brooklyn, New York, Fausto or Lalu, but those restaurants are closed due to the pandemic. And so I wanted to do a special season to highlight stories across the wine industry about how the pandemic has affected the industry as a whole. I also want to thank any of you who joined us for our orange wine tasting that I did with my partner at Lalu, Dave Foss. It was such a success. It was so much fun, really, that we're going to be doing another one this Friday, May 15th at 6 p.m. And it's going to be on Pet Nats, these really funky sparkling wines that Dave and I love so much. You can find information on how to get tickets. They're just $15 on our Instagram at Lalu Brooklyn. We're also going to be putting a link in the show notes. So I hope to see you there. Today's guest is going to be Greg Duty. Greg is the president and CEO of Vineyard Brands, a major wine importer. They bring in some of my favorite producers, including Vincent Dovisa, Laurent Tribou, Massolino Barolo, lots of great wines. And I was actually planning originally on having Greg on to talk about the tariffs. And we were planning on doing something, but then this COVID-19 pandemic came upon us all, and I thought he'd be the perfect person to talk to about how the pandemic is affecting a large swath of the industry that, you know, a lot of us as consumers don't really get to see firsthand. And Greg and I do get into discussion of the tariffs as well, and how the double whammy of increased wine tariffs plus the pandemic has really affected a lot of his producers and the industry as a whole. All right, Greg, thanks so much for being on the show. Really appreciate having you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I wonder if you could sort of walk us through what your life was like before COVID, before the pandemic. You work with so many spectacular brands and CEO of a major company. And I wonder if you can tell us what it was like before and give us a sense as to what you've been up to since everyone's had to be on lockdown.
Wow. So I used to travel a lot. So, you know, through my company, we travel around the world visiting our suppliers, you know, in their wineries and vineyards. I travel around the country catching up with our sales reps and our distributors. And obviously all of that has stopped. So we're all doing it by Zoom or Microsoft Teams or something like that. But so yeah, the travel is just done.
How much of your time was travel, and how many producers and sales teams do you work with?
We have about 60 producers all over the world. So a lot of them in Europe, but we have them in South Africa and South America, Australia, New Zealand. So my travel was about a third of my time, really. And so we have sales reps. We have 42 sales reps all throughout the country because we work in all 50 states plus Puerto Rico and DC. And so our sales reps live from Maine to California and Washington to Florida. So they're all over the place. And then obviously we have distributors in all 50 states. So that sort of keeps me busy running around the world and also running around the country.
And when you talk about sales reps, those are people selling to distributors?
Correct. So our sales reps, really, their main job is supporting the distributors, but also because of our portfolio, they also do a lot of selling directly to mostly restaurants and some retail stores. So where the distributors take the orders, our sales reps support them by, you know, selling our products alongside them.
So they're sort of the experts in those products, and they'll show face and give like a much better sales experience because they really know those products inside and out in the way that maybe a local distributor might not have that experience yet.
That's true. Yeah. So, but we also do one of our biggest jobs, we feel, is to educate the distributor to our portfolio. So we have a pretty big and diverse portfolio. So, you know, we try to educate them, but you're right. No one can tell the story like we can.
Wow. I mean, imagine as the CEO of this company, you're dealing with so many different personalities here, the salespeople, the distributors, the suppliers that you're working with. Who else am I missing? I'm sure there's more.
Oh, well, also the accounts, right? So restaurants and retailers, because I love coming to Fausto and La Luz. So I'm always out talking to people. I like wine. I like shopping for wine. I like drinking wine. So yeah.
So in place of this travel, I guess how much of your time was spent traveling? Because, you know, you said you work with so many different states, so many places. I imagine, you know, your time is pretty limited and valuable. And I'm sure you could spend the entire year traveling and still not go everywhere you want to go. How did you sort of determine where you're going to spend your time, what travel you're going to do?
So yeah, it is one of my biggest challenges before now was to rein in the travel, right? Because suppliers want to see you, you know, all the time, and you want to see them, but you just can't get all around the world all the time. And same thing with the distributors and sales reps. You know, they all want to see you. They want, you know, some FaceTime. And yeah, it was just a matter of prioritization. So, you know, whatever seemed like was the biggest need is where I would go first. But all that stopped now. So I'm sitting at home and we're doing everything by Zoom and Microsoft Teams, which is kind of fun.
What have been your priorities since this has ended?
The travel?
Since the travel's ended, I guess you can say. Yeah.
I'm really just making sure things are still moving, right? So we, luckily, we spent the last couple of years trying to go paperless in our office, which not at all expecting this, but literally on March 14th or March 13th, when I decided it was time for everyone to work remotely, we flipped a switch and have had absolutely no problems whatsoever for our business to keep running. Obviously, our sales reps can't go call on any accounts at all or work with their distributors really. So they've been, you know, sort of locked at home, which I know they don't like. But as far as the office, you know, like processing orders and logistics, you know, moving cases around the world, that's been sort of seamless from at least from the work from home perspective.
I mean, you're in such a unique position. I imagine that you have producers who probably have more that they want to sell to you than normal, right? And less of a demand on the other side. How are you sort of balancing that with so many of your, you know, accounts not being able to purchase at this point? And I'm sure producers are sort of desperate to sell and to get some revenue coming in.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, everyone's looking to sell, and it has been a problem because, you know, off-premises has blown up, right? Sales in grocery stores in particular have been just crazy. But as you know, the on-premise world, the restaurants just are pretty much shut down, right? Except for delivery or takeout where, you know, and a lot of places they've relaxed their alcohol regulations. So you're actually able to deliver wine along with food or have people pick it up along with food, which has been good. But, you know, that's just such a small percentage of the normal business, as you know. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have some large retail brands that have been around for a while. So that's keeping things moving. But other things that are more sort of boutique-ish that were sold to restaurants, obviously that's not really happening so much right now. There isn't a country in the world that hasn't been impacted by this. So they're all completely understanding and they know the situation. That's one of the things I've been really busy doing since the shutdown is, although I can't go see people in person, I've been trying to keep in touch as much as possible over Microsoft Teams or by written communications. But so everyone really, I think people are pretty well aware of the situation here and what we're able to do. So they've been really, really understanding, which is great.
I know your company has had some really long relationships with some of these suppliers. I'm sure that that's helped.
It does. Yeah, exactly. Because we're basically family. The guy who founded the company, Bob Haas, his family owned what is now Sherry Lehman in the past. So if you trace back through his family and the Sherry Lehman relationship, we've been representing some suppliers in Burgundy since just after Prohibition ended. So, you know, 70, 80 years. So we are basically family, which is good.
How is trust built? You say it's like a family, and you know, I'm sure paying your invoices on time is meaningful to a lot of a lot of growers who I know have trouble with their, you know, with their importers sometimes, but it sounds like there's more that you've done that I wonder if there are any stories that you can tell us.
No, but it is funny because you think, you know, when you say, oh, we pay our bills, it's funny how many people have had problems in the past with their importers paying their bills, which is shocking to me because I don't think we'd ever even thought about, it would never cross my mind not to pay what we owe. But we do, we really do just work with the suppliers, you know, if they have, you know, years where there's a short crop or years where they have a great crop, you know, we just make sure that we do everything we can to sell their wine and to sell as much as we can here and as widely distributed as we can so that in those years where they do have good crops that we can, you know, that they look to us as one of their primary markets to sell. And, you know, they just know that we really do work with them. We talk to them, we visit them, you know, twice a year mostly. And so they just, you know, it's just a good relationship. So I can't really think of any stories other than, you know, that when the tariffs started, I know you and I talked about this, that especially the one, you know, for France and Spain and Germany, that was just such a problem. And so we've been able to work with them to maintain whatever placements we've had over the years, you know, that some of them we've spent, you know, 50 years obtaining these placements in restaurants and retail shops. And so we had to work with them so that if you just let the tariffs happen on their own, then you lose all your business, which you can't do. So we worked with our suppliers and our distributors and ourselves to make sure that we maintained the price as much as we could. So working with suppliers that you've worked with for all these years, it's a nice thing to have that relationship so that you can really work with them. And there's no sense of like you're trying to, you know, pull one over on me. You know, they know that we're in this together. So, and they just feel the sense of family, I guess, that they've had for, you know, 50 years.
Yeah, you were the person I wanted to have on the show to talk about how devastating the tariffs were. Right. But God, I feel so bad that there are these producers that are having this like 1-2 punch of the tariff and then coronavirus, like one right after another. How are your suppliers coping with this? I know you have a lot of like historic family brands. I wonder if, you know, some of them are like, well, we've been through a lot of crap over the years. This will pass too. Or what are you hearing from them?
I think most of them are pretty good about it. You know, it's not an ideal situation, obviously, but I think people are thinking about it, like you said, just we've been through a lot of stuff in the past and we'll get through this as well. You know, and they aren't, the good thing is, it's not like they're saying, oh, well, you know, the US is having such issues, so we'll go sell to, I don't know, China or Russia or something like that. But it's just, you know, they are trying to look out for us as much as we're trying to look out for them, which is a good thing. You know, no one's abandoning us just because we're having issues, because really the whole world is having issues right now. And they don't want to lose the relationship that they built over the last, you know, 50, 100 years, however long they've been in business. So they've all had a really, really good positive outlook on this, especially the ones that have been through, you know, the tariffs as well, or we're still in the middle of the tariffs. But it's actually kind of, I hate to even say this, as I'm saying it, I'm going to throw up in my mouth. But the tariffs, you know, we had to adjust the way we did business starting in October. So when this all started in sort of mid-March, we had already done all the things that we would have done in the face of this. You know, we were, you know, slowing down what we were spending. We weren't traveling as much. We were, you know, just trying to make sure that we did everything we could to maintain a healthy business. So we were sort of doing it, you know, when we decided to work remotely in our office, I didn't have to send out a memo or something saying that, you know, all non-essential travel has to stop because we had already stopped all of that. So it was actually sort of phase two of a bad time. And so now we're sort of in the middle of it. But it is sad to see, you know, people like you and our on-premise world is just really going through such a terrible time right now. And that's hard to see.
Today's episode is brought to you by Melio, which is the digital payables platform that's made just for small businesses. And whether you own a restaurant, a wine bar, a retail store, or if you're a distributor, getting on Melio will make your life easier by centralizing all of your payments into one
clear platform.
One of the things that I love about Melio is that they enable you to pay via credit card across all of your purveyors, even those who don't normally accept it. And one of the things that Melio is doing just to support the restaurant industry during this time is that they are waiving all credit card fees. And I can tell you firsthand as a restaurant operator, being able to pay via credit card and especially having those fees waived during this time when cash flow is really tight is going to make all the difference. So visit gomelio.com and add your first bill to get started. I wonder if you could tell us the state of the tariff situation right now. The 25% tariffs are still imposed?
Correct. So it's as they've been, there have been sort of a roller coaster of what they thought was going to happen. But so it's 25% tariffs on wine from the UK, France, Germany, and Spain. 14% are under in containers, under 2 liters, and not Tokai for some reason. But anyway, so there have been several proposals to increase that or to expand it to other European countries. But where we sit now is where we were in October. So the Customs and Border Protection has allowed importers to suspend the payments of some customs duties, including tariffs, but they specifically exclude the tariffs that we have. So all of the good news that everyone keeps telling me about the tariffs is just not true. I mean, it doesn't impact us because ours are specifically excluded from the relief.
And I know there was talk of 100% tariff at some point. Does that seem like that's off the table?
I hope so. I mean, so yeah, they were talking about it starting in, I think, December 2nd. They started talking about increasing the tariff to 100% and then also increasing the number of countries that are impacted by it and also the wine. So they were going to start adding sparkling wine to it, which had been excluded before, and then wines over 14% and wines in all sizes, except for, I think it was between 3 and 6 liters. For some reason, there was an exception there. But sometime, I think it was in February, they said that we're going to leave the tariffs where they were because there was a pretty good effort made to educate the government as to what impact this has on, you know, some really pretty important industries in the United States. And they finally, a lot of them didn't know how it really worked. And so after the education process, they decided, okay, we should just leave it where it is. You know, we were hoping that they would eliminate them, but that didn't happen.
And can you explain with the 25% tariff, how that would, I guess, normally affect the final end consumer price, let's say the retail price, if the importer distributor didn't eat some of it? I'm sure that if it was all sort of realized upon receiving the product. And then like how I imagine you've had to cut into your margins and maybe ask distributors to cut into their margins a little bit. So it's spread out.
Right. So all of us in the three-tier system, if you don't do anything to adjust your prices, just the price is going to go up 25% as it enters the country.
It just goes up 25%. And then would it be 25% at every point throughout?
Exactly. So it wouldn't just be 25% on the shelf. It would be 25% and then everyone's margin on top of that, because it would have to go through the three-tier system. But so yeah, we've worked with the wineries, ourselves, and the distributors to try to maintain as much as we could the pricing before. So that, you know, if you're a restaurant and you've printed your list already at a certain price, we didn't want people to have to reprint lists and then, you know, change what they do, you know, potentially, you know, change out the selection. So
not to get too much into the nitty gritty, but I imagine, at least I know in New York, you have to price post, right? You have to like notify the SLA of what a price is, and you can't just change, a distributor can't just change the price, you know, can't just cut into their margin like on a short notice. And I've heard, I wonder if you can confirm or deny this, but if, you know, wine has left the port in Europe and the tariff went into effect while the wine was on the sea, my understanding is you're kind of out of luck. You've already paid for it. You just have to realize it all at that point. How did you sort of deal with those sort of quick, those like short time decisions? How are you like agile? I imagine like it takes time to work with suppliers and distributors for everyone to sort of coordinate and adjust their pricing so that the end consumer doesn't realize something, you know, a higher price quickly, or a restaurant doesn't have to reprint, as you said. But when you have those sort of like have to make those decisions quickly, how did you go about that?
Yeah, so we had, so they were originally announced on October 2nd, and to go into effect, I believe it was on the 18th. So it was 16 days, and nothing, even if it was in the port on a ship and the ship was sailing, you know, you're not going to be able to get something to the United States before the tariffs went into effect. So again, because we have these long standing relationships, particularly with our larger volume producers, we just got to work trying to figure out what we can do. And we just started with the largest volumes and then moved down from there, and then saw what was actually on the water to make sure that we addressed everything we could before it hit. You can though, so say something's on the water, you can actually put it in a bonded warehouse in the US and leave it there and not do anything with it. So it's actually not considered in the United States yet. And then once you take it out of the bonded warehouse, that's when you can pay the tariffs and the other, you know, customs duties that are due. The problem with that is then you're paying all the storage cost and you don't know when the tariffs are going to end or if they're going to end. So it really wasn't all that helpful. So yeah, we just worked with our suppliers and ourselves and our distributors just as quickly as we could to just make sure that the pricing was as close to what it was before as possible.
Yeah, I've heard from a few people I've spoken to that champagne is sort of struggling more than other categories. And you work with some of the top champagne houses. I wonder if you've noticed that as well, or if there are other categories that are doing, you know, better than others in these times.
So yeah, we've noticed with the champagne, and I've heard it from just about everyone. But then I read something this morning that champagne was having record sales into the US. But I was wondering, so when they were threatening to increase the tariffs to 100%, but also add sparkling wine, including champagne, people ordered a bunch of that just to have it stateside before the tariffs hit on that. So I'm wondering if that doesn't include that, because they were talking about exports from champagne just going through the roof, which is kind of crazy. But no, we've seen that. The things that we're seeing sell a lot are sort of the more value-oriented wines that are available, you know, pretty much everywhere, and they're in a retail setting. You know, rosé is still on fire, which is kind of blows my mind. But so that's going well. The things that aren't are the more boutique things that are more that we had placed at restaurants. Those are the ones that are struggling a bit right now.
I wonder if there are some opportunities that that you've noticed in this time. This has opened up any doors that maybe you wouldn't have seen before.
You know, not that we hadn't seen them before, but the e-commerce world is really going crazy right now. So we have expanded our relationship with some of the larger players just who are asking us for wine to sell, because a lot of the things that we had been selling to restaurants that weren't, you know, the restaurants aren't there buying anymore. They're like, hey, can we sell those on our platform? You know, people really want the wine. Can we do it?
I guess I have a two-part question for you coming up now. Before you took over as CEO of Vineyard Brands, you had another career not in the wine industry, right? You're a CPA and a lawyer.
Correct.
And I wonder, one, if there's anything from your, you know, your previous career that has been really useful to you right now in this current situation. But also, I imagine people have some time to reevaluate what their own careers are. And I have a feeling that people are going to be thinking about making career changes. I'm sure the world is going to be very different when we come out the other side of this. I wonder if you have any advice to career changers that you might want to give them.
Oh, wow. Good question. So yeah, I was a lawyer. So just before switching to where I am now, I used to do corporate restructurings. So that was, I guess it's sort of going through what we're going through now. You know, things just get thrown at you and you just have to adapt. So one of the things I had, just because I had so much experience in these sort of bad times, I keep having to tell people, like, don't look, just because I'm not freaking out, don't think that the situation isn't bad, because I've just been through this for the last 15 years of my life. So I don't freak out generally. So, but understand this, you know, when we were first starting to talk about the tariffs, I said, understand, this is not good at all. This is really terrible, but I'm not panicking because that's not going to help anything. So you just sort of get on with it and go through it. And then, as I was saying before, we had adapted for the tariffs and now we're just adapting for COVID-19. So, and I'm sure, you know, I told our employees, I do these town halls for all Vineyard Brands employees once every 2 weeks, just to let them know where we are and what I'm seeing. But I say, look, as long as we're smart about things, we're going to get through this. We're going to come out on the other side just fine. What that looks like, I don't know. Because I think you're right. People are, because our industry has been so badly hit by this, I do think people are going to take stock, you know, now that they have time to sit and think, you know, do I want to go through this? You know, what's it going to look like on the other side? You know, should I look for something else? So all I'd say is when I switched to this business, so I had done restructuring for so many years and I'd sort of gotten burnt out on that. And I retired for a bit, for like a year. I went to culinary school at the French Culinary Institute in Soho. But, you know, I just decided that when I was ready to get back to work, that I would do something I loved. So, you know, I've always been a big drinker of wine. So, you know, it's a business I love. I love all the people, the suppliers, I love the accounts, you know, it's just a great business. So it helps you get through times like this if you're doing something you really like.
I wonder, for your own personal wine consumption, how has this affected that?
Thank goodness I have a big cellar, but I've been going through it at a pretty good clip, you know, which is great. And I'm drinking some things. The good thing is I'm drinking some things that have just been sitting there and I'm thinking, oh, that's for a special occasion, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now you sort of look at the bottles like, this is a pretty special occasion, just being alive. So I've just sort of, whatever I want to drink, I just grab and drink it. So the good thing was, completely by accident, I ordered a Peloton for my house right before this. So I've actually lost weight, even though I'm drinking more and eating more, but I'm sweating it all off.
I wonder if you can tell if there's going to be any sort of lasting impacts to your company or to your industry as a whole. Are you starting to forecast that at this point?
You know, we've tried, but as we get into it, we just don't know what it's going to look like at all. You know, one of our, just because of the way our portfolio is, we're sort of on-premise specialists. And so it's in our DNA to do that. So we don't know what that's going to look like at the moment. You know, when are people going to open up? What is it going to look like? You know, are people going to be drinking like they did? Are they going to be going for more value-oriented wines? Are they going to drink less? Are they going to drink, you know, spirits rather than wine? We just don't know at this point because, you know, we worried at the beginning that right as this happened that, you know, orders would just dry up, right? But that, it was actually kind of the opposite. Again, it was all off-premise, but people were stocking their pantries pretty furiously at the very beginning. But then once that happened, then we saw orders decline for a while and then they spike up a little bit as people have gotten used to this and are just, you know, it's the shock of it all has worn off, I think. And now it's just sort of people hunkering down and things are becoming more normal. But, you know, think about what it was only a month ago that this all started. So we have no idea, you know, as states start to open, like, you know, Georgia opened oddly, you know, what, tattoo parlors, massage parlors, nail salons, all that.
Essential and businesses.
Right, exactly. Essential businesses. But, and today they're opening restaurants, but I was thinking, I'm not sure I'm ready to go back, you know, unless they're taking it seriously, you know, and social distancing still and putting in, you know, real strict measures for their staff and for other diners. I'm not sure I'm ready to go back just yet. And I haven't actually heard any really good, solid plans that the restaurants have at this point. I'm sure they're developing them, but I told our people last Friday, I just said, look, we just have to be smart about this. And then I think we'll get through whatever it looks like, you know, we'll just adapt, you know, and figure it out.
Do you think that travel will be sort of less a part of what you do in the future?
I hope so. Actually, don't. I'm kind of a homebody. I'd rather be sitting on, I have a nice outdoor space in my apartment in Brooklyn. So I'd much rather just be sitting there than, you know, on a plane somewhere. So, but I do think it'll be slower for a while, but then, you know, than it was right beforehand. But I do think it'll pick up again. I think things will get back when, I don't know, but things will get back to the way it used to be. especially in this business, you know, it's such a social business. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'll call you on the phone or let's team or Zoom or whatever. You know, they want to still see you. So, and I want to see them. So I think it'll get back to normal.
I hope that communal tables will finally meet their demise in restaurants.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, I've been liking to end these episodes on a positive or hopeful note. Have you seen anything that's been inspiring for you throughout this, or that gives you hope that, you know, we're going to come out on the other side in a better way?
So I don't know if you've noticed, but I look up at the sky now and it's unbelievable. You know, we're having a great spring down here in Alabama right now, and the air quality has never been better. So I think maybe that, you know, when everyone's been shut in and there aren't the cars running around and the factories, you know, going full tilt, I think maybe we'll see how it could be if people paid more attention to the environment and maybe learn from it, because it's just gorgeous right now.
Yeah. I mean, combine that with less air travel and people realizing that they can go paperless, as you were, you know, trying to do for your company, that I hope as well that this inspires sort of, you know, somewhat of a green revolution.
Yeah, me too.
Greg, I hope that I can see you in a restaurant in person sometime soon. But until then, I'm really grateful that you came on In the Drink. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much. Can't wait to see you.
All right. That's it for this episode of In the Drink. I want to give a big thanks to Greg Duty of Vineyard Brands. This was an enlightening conversation. I also want to thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And a big thanks goes to our producer, Jessamine Molly of Seaplane Armada. She is absolutely the best, and I appreciate everything that she does. And a huge thanks to our sponsors, 750.com and Melio. Thanks so much for your support. Also, one last shout out to our Zoom Mind Class at Lalu on Friday, May 15th, 6 p.m., only $15. Link in the show notes or on our Instagram at Lalu Brooklyn. I hope to see you there. This episode is brought to you by 750.com. If you're lucky enough to be ordering wine right now for your restaurant or retail store or bar, it could not be any easier than to do it directly through 750.com. You can build and send orders via your desktop or mobile, and it'll save you time by compiling all of those orders in one place. You know, if I was to be ordering some wine right now, I would look up 750. I might find a biodynamic wine from, I don't know, let's say Lazio. I think I really love the wines from Lazio, so I'm typing in Lazio in. And maybe I want a Cesenese. Just type that into raw materials. And I found all of these great options. I'm going to get the Piero Riccardi Lorella Reale Cesenese from Lazio from Critical Mass Selections. And I found it that easily. In just 5 more seconds, I can get that wine ordered. So place all of your orders via 750.com and make your life easier.